KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, August 21st, 2003, for broadcast at this time. Today's topic will be shrink-wrapped radio, lots of stations, fewer owners. The speakers will be Dick Chapin, former radio station owner, now a broker for radio station sales, and one of the first to petition the FCC to relax some of its regulations on radio stations back in the 1970s. And Steve Saleen, vice chairman of Wait Media. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is UNO Professor of Communications Chris Allen, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Allen. I'm from the University of Nebraska at Omaha Department of Communication. I have the pleasure of moderating this afternoon's Omaha Press Club Forum. At least once a month, the Press Club, through its Education Committee, sponsors a forum of interest to club members and to the community at large. The forums are open to everyone. You do not have to be a member of the Press Club to attend. When the sale of KEFM Mix 96 is completed, there will be no independently owned commercial mainstream radio stations in Omaha. In fact, the commercial stations in Omaha will be owned by just three companies. Clear Channel owns four and is buying a fifth, at least at my last count. Journal Broadcasting owns eight. Wait Media owns nine. The largest radio station owner in the United States is Clear Channel, which as of recently owns 1,250. That was a couple of hours ago. Who knows how many now. All of this is a huge departure from 30 years ago when I started in radio. At that time, any one company could own only two radio stations in a market, one AM and one FM. Any company could own seven AM radio stations and seven FM radio stations nationwide. That's all that a station could own, and then seven television stations. Over the last 25 years, the Federal Communications Commission has been engaged in deregulating radio, from certain technical aspects to most visibly and most recently, the ownership restrictions that had always been placed on radio. In the last couple of months, the current FCC, on a party line vote, voted to raise the ownership cap. A company may now own stations. There's no limit on the number of stations that a company can own. The limit is now that a station can own, one company can own stations that cover no more than 45% of the U.S. population. That was raised recently from 35%. To be frank, I've lost track of how many stations in one market a company can own. Obviously, it's nine or more. This latest FCC action has raised a lot of eyebrows. It was advocated by a lot of people in the industry. It's been criticized by a lot of people outside the industry. Yesterday, U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan of North Dakota announced that he was going to introduce legislation to lower that 45% by law, which would take that decision-making process out of the hands of the FCC and give it to Congress. FCC Chairman Michael Powell also announced yesterday that he intends that the FCC would at least revisit the ownership rules over the next year, perhaps hold some hearings on them. We have two guests to talk about this issue and give us some perspectives on it. Our first guest is Dick Chapin. Mr. Chapin is a former Nebraska radio station owner. He is now a broker for radio station sales. We might praise him or blame him, whichever, because he was among the owners some 25 years ago that got the ball rolling on deregulation. But his interest was in easing some of the more technical aspects of radio station licensing. It's his opinion, from what I understand chatting on the phone, that deregulation now may have gone a little too far. Mr. Chapin lives in Lincoln. Our second guest is Steve Saleen, vice chair of Wait Media. Wait owns 72 radio stations in Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Florida. The largest market in which Wait owns a radio station is Omaha, where it owns nine stations. In terms of station ownership, Wait is the 23rd largest company in the U.S., and in terms of the number of stations it operates, it's the ninth largest company in the United States. In the interest of full disclosure, let me say that Mr. Chapin is one of the brokers Weight Media works with. I don't think that's going to cause any problems one way or the other. I've asked them each to make some opening remarks, and then we'll take questions from the audience. There are pencils and paper on the tables for you to write your questions. Someone will come around and pick them up, and we'll ask those questions from the podium up here. So first, to the stand, I'd like to invite Mr. Chapin.
Thank you, Chris. whether I get the blame or not, I don't know, but I've been in the radio business for 50 years as of March of this year. And when I started, you could only, at that time, there were only three AM radio stations in Lincoln, and so I go back a long way. And as Chris has outlined very well, the deregulation process started really in about 1972, where Dean Birch, who was then chairman of the FCC, came to Lincoln. And I happened to be national chairman of the radio and TV industry at the time. And I was very, very afraid of the Federal Communications Commission because they were all powerful. And so I'd made a suggestion to him that perhaps they would set up an office where a little radio operator out in Broken Bow, Nebraska, could pick up the phone and call the FCC and get an answer to something he was doing without fear he was going to be penalized or fined. And Chairman Birch says, well, that's going a little bit too far, but we can do something. So he established a group of people from the FCC, five of them, and I appointed five broadcasters. And we started to meet in, I think, the fall of 72 to start changing the rules. For instance, at that time we could talk to a man on the moon, but we had to be able to see the transmitter when we were announcing on the microphone, which seemed a little silly to me. And so we started. And we probably changed somewhere between 450 and 550 rules that were on the books. Well, that was the beginning. Then Dick Wiley became chairman of the FCC, and that was really a white horse for somebody to ride into the sunset on, and so he carried things even further, but they were all with the rules. And then he was succeeded by a chairman by the name of Fowler, who was very liberal in his thoughts and felt that they should open this up to more broadcasters. So I'm not sure what the date was, but along about then, they created a docket at the FCC named 8090, and what it did was create 900 new FM stations in the country. All of these stations mostly were allocated to small communities like Crete and Seward and Beatrice. Well, today, as all of you know, Crete and Seward and Beatrice stations are all Lincoln stations. And the Nebraska City station, which I happen to own now, that station is an Omaha station. So all it did was create more pressure in the bigger markets. They took it away from the smaller markets. Well, I think after a period of time, in their infinite wisdom, the FCC finally decided maybe we made a mistake. Maybe we better open up this situation and let people own more stations. As Chris had outlined, up until that time, you could only own 7 AM, 7 FM, and 7 television. Of the 7 television, two of them had to be UHF. And if some of you don't know what UHF, it was just a different power station. But the reason that UHF television was popular in the United States is because the government was wise enough to make sure that every set that was manufactured had to contain the proper ingredients so that you could receive UHF on it. They did not do that in the radio band. They did not say that every radio that was created had to be able to receive FM. So I'm sure many of you here today drove cars with radios in them and couldn't get an FM station in because you couldn't receive it. So they decided to open this up and allow, in my estimation, what you call duopoly, more stations in a market. In my early days, the company that I was with owned Coil in Omaha, they owned KFOR in Lincoln, and they owned half of KFAB. And when they passed the rule, the family had to divest, and we gave up half of KFAB and took COIL and KFOR. Whether that was a bright decision, I'm not sure. But in any event, that's what we did. So now you have what is going on, and as Chris outlined, Clear Channel Communications now owns 1,250 radio stations in the United States. Now, is that wrong? I'm not saying that's wrong. Are there good things that come out of it? A lot of good things. I happen to be a local type radio operator and feel and still feel that in an individual market that a local operator, if he's been there, if he's created his niche, if he's in a format that he's been in for a long time, and if he's doing his community services, he can exist and do very well. I think that we've proved that in some of the markets that we're in, and I think it's still there today. So I don't know if I covered enough there, Chris, or not.
That'll do.
Okay.
Next is Steve Saleen, who is vice chair of Weight Media.
Thanks. Thank you. Well, we like to joke. Dick and I work quite a lot together. We really enjoy each other's company, and we have a lot of things in common in terms of the radio business and stuff like that. But Dick got into the radio business 3 months before I was born, so it's, you know, his perspective, he's forgotten more about radio than I'll ever know, so it's kind of fun for me to be following him and talking a little bit about it. Weight Media is as Chris so aptly described, a fairly large media company. Some people would think of us as being a consolidator. Some people would think of us as being one of those bad guys that are rolling up all the little radio stations across the United States. And to a certain extent, that's exactly what our corporate strategy is to basically regionalize and put together a overlapping set of signals that will cover the state of Nebraska or the state of South Dakota or the state of Kansas, whatever state we happen to be in. And it's working out quite well for us through the good efforts of some of the people that are in this room today and through that with the help of Mr. Chapin and various other folks. I'll help you out, Chris, in terms of getting a little controversy going, because we would definitely tell you that consolidation has been good for not only our company but it is also good for the radio industry, and it's especially good for the listener. I'll give you an example. In Omaha, we own seven stations in Omaha and two stations in Fremont, which I think are officially counted in what Chris is thinking when he says nine stations in Omaha. The two stations in Fremont concentrate on Fremont, and although they sell some advertising that comes here from Omaha, because obviously a lot of people come in from Fremont to Omaha, they spend a lot more time concentrating on Midlands college football and Fremont High basketball and Fremont Catholic baseball and various other things like that. So it's a very much of a local station up there. In Omaha, we've recently used a station. Some of you have heard of Hot 107.7. And Hot 107.7 is an example, I think, of what happens when consolidators can really can roll up some stations and be able to use their resources on niches that would not otherwise be covered. Hot 107 is actually a translator station, and I see some Channel 6 people in the room. They'd understand this. It's on the Channel 6 tower at 36th and Farnham, and it has a full 107 watts of power behind it, pounding away. And for those of you who know that 107 watts is basically the equivalent of a light bulb compared with the 100,000 watts that is going on at most of the other stations around town. That station is a translator for our station in Blair, 97.3. And what we've been able to do because of the ability to consolidate the expenses is to take that station and change it over to an urban station. And an urban station plays all the way from hip-hop to R&B and is basically aimed at an urban audience. Now, the people in Blair are probably not exactly excited about the fact that their station has turned over and become a an urban hip-hop station, but the good news is that it is serving a part of the community that has not been served previously, at least in the manner that it that we think it should be. And we found great acceptance in the market when we brought Light Rock 101.9 to town. I think Mike helped me with this, but I think we did 10,000 songs in a row on the station, and we spent in excess of $100,000 in promoting the station out of the box. And if you listen, that's 10,000 songs in a row with 6 weeks with no commercials. So we spent a lot of money promoting Light Rock 101.9. It opened up, if I remember correctly, with a 2.7 as its market share right out of the box, which was tremendously successful. We were very happy about that. We were very excited about it. In contrast, when we did Hot 107.7, and I think that started on December 31st of last year, we spent a full $4,000 in promoting that, and we had didn't do anything in terms of running 100 even 100 songs in a row. We just went right to the format and kicked it off and went promoting it with our full $4,000 out. It opened up with a 2.8 share. So you can see that if you find the right niche and you promote it and you get to the people and you tap into a vein of passion like that, that you're gonna get a very successful radio station. We're very excited about what 107.7 is doing, and it is serving a niche that I think in the previous world, prior to all the consolidation that has gone on, would not be served. Because frankly, you wouldn't take a Blair station and run it into Omaha like that, and you wouldn't. And it has been tried to do in the past, and it's been unsuccessful. But since we have so much of our expenses already covered and so much of the overhead already covered, we can go out and serve niches like the urban radio stations in Omaha, or we can go out and serve, or Journal can go out and serve the Hispanic population in Omaha with their radio station. These kind of things are available because of deregulation, and we're excited about it. So I'll give you a little controversy to play with, and we can go and you can tell us what you want us to do from there. But
well, don't go away, because I have the first question, and it's for you.
Okay.
What happened to serving Blair? You're serving the hip-hop market, but Blair doesn't no longer has a radio station.
It's a great question. And the good or the bad news was that Blair was not particularly excited about the station that we had there before, so it was a pretty easy decision for us to go and change it. Blair is now being served by our two stations in Fremont, and we are doing cross programming, and we're doing cross marketing, so that the natural link between Blair and Fremont, which is a lot more significant than the natural link between Blair and Omaha, is working hopefully to serve the Blair community. But in terms of what's going on, the urban community in Omaha is much larger than the community of Blair in reality. So it was a community that needed to be served. We've gotten I've had people from the Chamber of Commerce, from the school district, from a number of other people come up to me and just say, thank you for doing Hot 107.7. Thank you for what they call a culture shock program, which is trying to explain to people what the hip-hop culture is about and explain to them that it isn't all about gangster rap and that there is an actual set of beliefs and set of values that go with hip-hop that is much beyond what I think the press portrays it as.
Dick, I'd like to ask this question of you from the audience, and you can give us, again, a historical perspective. Who owns the airwaves? Do the people own the airwaves? Do the broadcasters own the airwaves? Does the FCC own the airwaves? What is that? Got to come up here.
I've always believed that the people own the airwaves. That's a simple answer. We were licensed in the... for the interest of public convenience for the population, and that's the way it's been. The FCC is the watchdog and the policeman of the airways, and of course that's where the big controversy is now of what they're doing. And of course you have the other side, you have the political side now, and that's what's playing in Congress now. That's what the big battle is of who's really going to decide what's going on.
Which Which really segues into the next question. Whatever happened to the former, and I don't know if it was codified into the 1996 Telecommunications Act, but there's always been a phrase that broadcasting must operate in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. Is that still there? Does anyone pay attention to it?
It's still there. I don't know whether they're paying attention to it or not. I remember way back when we used to have to go around and do surveys in the community when our licenses were renewed. We had to talk with community leaders to find out what the problems were in the community so we could answer these through our programming. But I remember at the time, because of my position nationally, dealing with the commission all the time, that there were some commissioners on to say, why do we have these rules? We don't enforce them anyhow. In my early days in broadcasting, they had a big field staff, probably 20 people, which is not really big for the United States. But these people were going out monitoring and an inspecting station. Today, I think there may be two left. They also had monitoring stations. There was one in Grand Island, Nebraska that I remember vividly. You had to keep your signals and so on. None of that is, in my estimation, is being done today. To me, today, the only way that a radio station will get in trouble is if they don't have their public file in order, or if their emergency broadcast system is in order, or if they do something woefully wrong. There's nobody monitoring what they call spurious emission, which is interference to signals or anything like that. That's all been abandoned, as far as I know, as an operator.
Steve, I'd like you to address the same question. How does Waite Media address the issue of public interest, convenience, and necessity outside of the entertainment aspect of it?
Well, it's a great question. We feel very strongly that community service is part of what we do. In our communities, we tell our general managers, we've got a simple test for our general managers, and I think it works real well. If when the superintendent of schools decides that he wants to do a bond issue, is our general manager one of the first five people he calls? And to the extent that he isn't, then he isn't enough involved in the community to be able to, and the school, obviously the superintendent of schools doesn't think he has enough influence within the community to make a difference. We want our guys to be people of influence within the community, people that are serving the community by going out and spreading the news. In a lot of the communities we're in, we're the primary media, and we realize that that's true as we go along. There's a heavy responsibility with that. We'll do things like in towns where there's only weekly newspapers, we're running the hospital reports every day. We're running the mortuary reports every day. We're doing eulogies. We're doing all sorts of things like that. We do, there's in a town that we're in that we don't do high school sports, that we don't do all sorts of things where basically we're the second level of the Chamber of Commerce. So if that's, we really think that that's an important part of what we do. I could give you hours on what the Omaha stations do, and hopefully we're making an impact.
Dick mentioned a moment ago the public file. Can you explain what the public file is, how you gather information for it, and what you have to maintain?
Yeah, I could if Carl had come up here and explained it to me. We have two people in our office that are charged. Our chief engineer and our director of governmental relations are both charged with the responsibility of making sure that all of our radio stations, all those that we own and all those that we manage, are well within the FCC regulations. We have dedicated individuals who are getting paid, I should say, probably too high a salary in my position, but I'm sure Carl would disagree with me, are getting paid good salaries to go out and make sure that we're in compliance. And we don't want to be the rule that we give them is we don't want them to be anywhere near the chalk line on this thing, kicking up chalk. We want to be right down the middle of the court. We want to be fully in compliance with it. The public files and the things that we put in the public files, I'm sorry to tell you, the number of times that anybody comes in and checks your public files are so small that it would be ridiculous. I can tell you two instances where you're going to get your public files checked. One, your competitor is going to come in and check your public file to find out if there's any information in there that they can use. And two, you'll get hit by, as a subsidiary of the public files, you'll also get hit with a lot, when the political season comes up, everybody will be coming in to check your files to find out how much the their opponents are advertising on the radio. That is it. The only other time somebody comes in to check your public files is if they've got a gripe against you and they want to file a complaint with the FCC.
Dick, as a broker, you work with a lot of station owners and a lot of companies, sellers and buyers both. What has been the attitude, if you will, of station owners, especially in rural areas, to the deregulation?
Well, I think most of the people in the rural areas, of course, like the hometown radio, like to have it themselves. But, of course, as time has passed, they realize that by the groups getting into the business, the value of their radio stations increases. And so you have people that have held on for a long, long time and now are getting prices for the stations they never anticipated. But in my background and history, I was in the era when all broadcasting stations were owned by broadcasters primarily. And today, the big groups are owned by public companies, and therefore there's a big change in the philosophy. I mean, public companies are interested in stock prices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just told Al this morning that I made a call from his office to a friend of mine who runs the biggest station, the number one radio station in Dallas, KKAR, which is an urban station. And about 14 years ago, I went to him and offered him $11 million on behalf of a buyer to buy his stations, and he wouldn't sell. If he'd give me the opportunity, I could sell his station this afternoon for $250 million. You might not pay that.
Yeah, but it wasn't us.
You know, when this may have just been the people that I worked for, but whenever I asked for a raise when I was starting out, they always told me how much money the station was losing. I think I don't believe them anymore. Steve, you justify your station's community and public responsibilities. What about other large media owners? Are you unusual? Are you the norm? You had to talk about competitors, but in your experience, is Weight Media's commitment unusual? Is it standard?
Let me answer for him.
Okay.
I think Weight is unusual because it's not publicly owned. And they do have an interest in the communities, and they do try to do their job. And I'm not just saying that because Steve's here. But as I said, the big public companies are owned by Wall Street. And everything is driven to the bottom line to increase the value of their stock. And while they say that they do these jobs, they're not doing them. I don't know how you can manage 1,250 radio stations. I don't know how your organization can be there. I don't have that comprehension. They are trying. They're making an honest job. I know Mr. Mays, who owns Clear Channel, very well. He's a friend of mine. But they haven't achieved it yet. But so I think Weight is unusual in that respect.
Well, let me give a quick comment on that, because I certainly don't want to be throwing our friends at Clear Channel too far under the bus here.
I did.
Yeah, I know you did. And that was Dick Chapin, Chapin, in case you were with Clear Channel. It becomes interesting. We actually have somewhat of a competitive situation in Omaha where people go and want to sponsor certain events. It drives Mike Payne crazy, our general manager in Omaha, to try and go out and make sure that we have that we're the sponsors on some of the more well-attended, prestigious events. But that's literally something that we've charged him with, that we want to make sure that we are. And Clear Channel will beat us to the punch, or Journal will beat us to the punch, or some of the other competitors out there in the other places where we have competitive markets. I think where the large publicly held companies have sometimes failed to follow on their community responsibilities is a tendency to go with the sensational. And Howard Stern or Don Imus would be the primary examples of that, where they go. And it's hard for me to say, because because obviously there is a certain appeal to this, or people wouldn't be doing it. But sometimes they'll lower the standards rather than raising the standards in terms of behavior, and will put people on the air that probably aren't people that, if we sat back and thought about it, we would necessarily want to have as an example to our children, or to even to us as adults either. So that's the only thing I really think is a problem.
Okay, we have three broadcasters standing up here, and none of us apparently knows how to use a microphone. The people in the back, that's like on the Academy Awards, when they give the awards for best sound, the guys that come up, the people that come up and accept it always just talk right about it. You're welcome. So we have to do a little better job, I guess. It has been reported that KFAB's local news is delivered from a studio in Denver. Is that true? And if so, how can that serve a local audience?
Well, again, if you're from Clear Channel, I apologize. I don't want to be throwing you totally under the bus, but part of their news is being delivered from Denver, and they have a good news staff in Denver, and they've decided to consolidate it. And I think all they're doing is faxing the information to Denver, and I think they've got it on for some of their local. Mike, you know better than I do, but I think they've got it on for some of their local broadcasts or local, or some of their news broadcasts are local, and then they flip over and do the Denver, and they're not just doing Omaha to Denver; they're doing a whole range of news operations, and presumably with a guy with a really deep voice, and a very authoritative sounding guy. I don't listen to that station, so I don't really know what's going on.
How do you make the these niche stations profitable? I'll ask that as a two-part question. But how do you make them profitable? Is it a small audience? Is it a large? What's the strategy?
We think one of our strategies, one of the things that we really focus on, is trying to tap into people's passions. The guy that founded our company is a guy named Norm Waite, and he founded another little company called Gateway Computers. And the two things that they talk about at Gateway are the same two things that we talk about at Waite Radio: delivering value and tapping into people's passions. And there's a huge amount of passion for these niches. If you really like urban hip-hop radio, you really like urban hip-hop radio, but there may not be very many of you, but there you have a deep passion for it. So if we can find that person, they'll listen to it pretty much all the time that they're listening to radio, and we like to serve that population. The only way, though, Chris, your question is really goes back to my earlier statements about consolidation. The only way we can make that profitable is because all of the overhead is covered by the stations that have a bigger listener base, and the sales staff is selling both the urban hip-hop station, and, oh, by the way, you can also buy our mainstream AC or whatever. You know, it depends on which group you're dealing with.
Mainstream AC would be adult contemporary for those of you not familiar with our alphabet. Each of you, how does consolidation benefit advertisers?
All right, well, we can disagree about this. That'll be fun. I think it benefits advertisers to a great extent, because they're able to come into our stations, and or our salesmen presumably are going out to their to meet with the advertisers, and we're able to say to them, all right, for instance, in Omaha, we have what we call our Wall of Women strategy, and we can basically say to an advertiser who wants to reach women that they can buy
one of our stations at, they can buy Suite 98 and cover the 18 to 34-year-olds. They can buy 106.9, the city, and cover the 34 to 45-year-olds. And they can go and they can buy Light Rock 101.9 and cover pretty much that whole gamut all over the place. So I think it's got a strong appeal in terms of being able to give the advertiser a lot more options within one sales staff, making it much more efficient, presumably giving them a lower cost per advertiser, or a lower cost to reach the customer.
Well, I think it gives them a basis to compete with the newspaper. A lot of the newspaper doesn't pertain to everybody that reads it. They only read certain parts of it, and the advertising is there. And with a group of radio stations offering different age demographics and sex demographics, they have a bigger number aggregately than the newspaper has. This is proved in many markets. I don't know the specific numbers on Omaha, but I dare say with your group of stations and the diversity of them, you have a bigger audience out there in a week's time than the circulation of Omaha World Herald.
There's a question here that's sort of a technical nature. Who are the members of the Federal Communications Commission? Who appoints them? The president appoints them. There are five commissioners. One is appointed as chair. By law, no more than three can be of any political party. So right now there are three Republicans and two Democrats. In a Democratic administration, that changes around. For how long? I think they are five-year terms, so that every year a new person is appointed or reappointed, and that's the way that works. At one time, there were seven members, and they were appointed regionally. They had to come from regions of the country. I don't think that's true any longer.
Chris, I might add, over the years, there's been very few broadcasters that have been FCC commissioners.
They tend to be lawyers, actually. Steve, if you are catering to niche markets, do you have a station that covers local state news, local and state news, in a thorough and comprehensive manner?
We hope so. We think that a number of our stations carry news. In Omaha, KCAR would be probably the single leading news operation in the city in terms of resources devoted to in the radio business devoted to it. We've got more reporters working on stuff on covering the news in Omaha than any other radio station. We also have the ability on KCAR to slice over and get our sports reporting from our sports station, ESPN 1620, and we have the ability to reach over and take from our ag reporting network on COIL Classic Country on 1020. So we have a broad range of reporting available. And, you know, in Omaha, we tend to forget how important ag is, and it's really extremely important as we cover the region and the area. And so we think we've got a fairly broad range of news coverage, and those resources can be tapped by the FM stations and go for it on and be able to use the news that's coming off of our news talk stations. On 9/11, we flipped off all the stations and ran KCAR across all of our frequencies in Omaha and did that for two or three days with basically the idea that we needed to forget about making money for those days and provide news coverage to everybody in the town. I guess that would probably go back to the earlier question of how do you serve the community.
I don't know, Steve, this may be a heads up. Do you feel that your company will have or may have trouble with a petition to deny at license renewal for your Blair property?
I didn't before this question. There's probably a fairly good chance that that somebody in Blair might be upset with what's going on in terms of diversity and political issues, though. We are doing, I think, a solid job of serving a community that has been totally underserved before, and I think the FCC would agree that that's true, and that what we're doing there is serving the urban community in a manner that needed to be done. We're very convinced that that's true. And we think, and just so you know, we think that Fremont is doing a good job of covering Blair. I know it isn't the same thing, but there are a lot of towns in the state of Nebraska that don't get covered by radio stations that are hometown to that station. They get covered by stations that are from the nearest town. And Fremont's kind of the regional hub in east central Nebraska.
Mr. Chapin said that the FCC called its action opening up. Many of us call it closing up. Where is the choice for news when it mostly comes from a single controlled source? Since you phrased it, you get to take first stab at it.
I'm not sure I totally understand the question.
That's what it is. That's what it says. Where is our choice for news when it mostly comes from a single controlled source?
Well, there's a lot of diversity of sources in the market besides radio. You've got television. You've got 100 cable channels. So I think there's a choice there. But if you're a radio listener and you're listening for radio news, if they're bringing it in from outside, if they're doing a good job, you're getting some local news. If they're not doing a good job, you're not going to get local news. Music, they can do that real easy. You know, the record, no matter where it's played, where it comes from, it's the same record, it's the same tune. But news is an altogether different matter.
Which really leads to another question. With so many stations owned by so few companies, don't we run the risk of one or two companies exerting undue influence on large segments, 45% of the population, by manipulating editorial control?
I could be flip and say that we certainly hope so if we're one of the stations or if we're one of the groups that's doing the undue influence. But the truth is, it's in this day and age, it's really, really hard to have an influence that's outsized. I would guess that if you looked at it historically and thought back to the times when when a newspaper endorsement of a single political candidate was the most important thing in getting that candidate elected, and compare that to this day and age where our radio stations are doing and our radio stations and our TV stations are doing everything they can to get political debates and get people on the air so that the average listener, average viewer can get a chance to compare the political candidates. I think we sometimes get to the point in time where we have so much comparison going on that it drives people away from our news channels. But I would guess that the diversity of opinion situation right now is significantly better than it ever has been before. And, I don't think without changes in technology and some of the new rules that deregulation has brought on, I don't think you would have a Fox News channel, and frankly, you probably wouldn't have a CNN either. So that those things that have gone on and changed how the United States views its politicians and political situation are probably a result more of deregulation than have been prevented by deregulation.
One member of the audience wanted to know, who are the principals of Weight Media? And I'll add into that, how ingrained, especially the ones involved in radio, how ingrained are they in the Omaha community?
Weight Radio is, the principal is Norm. He's the sole owner. He owns 100% of the company and is ingrained in the community. To the extent that he has a place here in Omaha, he also he's not a native of Omaha, he's from Sioux City, but he's a Midwesterner at heart, and although he's got a number of diverse business interests, he spends a lot of time in our fair city and has contributed to charities around town and basically become involved in the community. I think the good news for Omaha is that Weight Media is, everybody else in Weight Media is basically in Omaha at the senior level, and we're all very, scarily Omaha-type people. The president of the company, Mike Delich, is a Burkhai person. I'm vice chairman. I'm Benson High School. Our CFO, the number three guy in the company, is a Millard North guy, a Millard North graduate. So you're dealing with a really crazily, Omaha centric type of situation. We are worried that we are too Omaha centric and that we need to look beyond our borders more than we are worried about being involved in the community.
The station, or a question sort of dear to me, because I got a start in radio from a very generous manager who let a 17-year-old high school kid work a night shift. How important is it now, with voice tracking and things like that, to develop new talent, local talent? How does a kid get a break these days?
I think most of them are getting a break in a small market because that's where most of them started. We're in the process of trying to hire a person in Nebraska City right now, a morning man, and that's one of the most difficult tasks we've ever undertaken. And it didn't used to be that way. There were a lot of people getting out of announcing schools, and they just gradually went in, just like you, night announcer overnight, help clean up and everything else. There don't seem to be that cadre of people coming on today. Most of them, and I've talked at the University of Nebraska College several times about this, and when you ask the senior class or the graduate students what they want to do, they either want to be a sports director of ABC or they want to be a news anchor of CBS or something like that, and very few of them go into sales, and nobody wants to be just an announcer. It's very difficult.
Wait here a moment. What stations do you own? And please tell us about local services provided by your stations.
Well, we own Nebraska City, and if there ever was a grassroots radio station, that's it. I was interested in some of the comments being made about getting a petition to deny in Blair, Nebraska. We had a morning man who quit, just came in on Friday morning, laid his key on the desk, and wasn't coming back. They had a petition signed by 400 people to bring him back to the radio station. We didn't even fire him. I mean, that's how serious they are in Nebraska City. They wrote letters to the editor, and thank goodness the editor of the paper came over and talked to us and said, we think this is frivolous. We're not going to write this. But here's a town that has had three frequency changes on their FM in the last 5 years. We're the third in line. So a lot of the people down there think they're listening to FM, but they're really listening to 1600 on the AM band. So it's a real confusing thing. Are we grassroots there? Yes, we are. If you listened to a newscast down there and heard it in the morning, you would think you're in another universe, because we're talking about things that are really basic in town. It's real homespun, and we're carrying funeral announcements and not once a day. We carry them about seven times a day. We changed the time we were carrying them. And we about run out of town because I don't get up before 7 o'clock, so I want that announcement at 7:10. That's called local radio. That's what we're doing there. We own the other radio stations that we have. We're in what we call joint sales agreements or local management agreements. And guess who we're with? Waite Media. They're basically operating the radio stations. We own them, and we have an interest in them, but they're running them as local stations there in small communities like Spencer, Iowa, Storm Lake, Iowa, Grand Island, Nebraska, and right here in Omaha, KCRO, and the manager's sitting right over here. And we have a real niche format. We have a Christian format, and there are several stations in town which we compete with, but we try to be as local as we can. We're just starting a new program that we're bringing. Currently, we have 17 local ministers that are going to be coming on the station on the 8th of September. We hope to finally have a total of, how many is it, Al? 24 ministers will be on the air from 6 to 9 o'clock at night with different services. So we think we're very local.
Do any of your stations, Steve, do any of your stations limit the amount of time available to political candidates and issues?
Let's see now. I guess the answer to that would be yes. We do limit the amount of time that is available to politicians in terms of, in South Dakota, where we have a lot of stations, things kind of got a little bit out of control last year because there was so much money being spent in that area. So we did do that to a certain extent, a very limited extent, in South Dakota last year. But that's the only time I can think of us limiting the buy to it. It would be more relevant on a TV station than it would have been on a radio station. And we did not do that at our TV station in Sioux City, KMEG. We decided that we would run all the political we could take up there. And even though the reason that that question is relevant is because you have to, you're limited on the amount of money that you can charge to political candidates. So it's a little bit different.
I guess we were in a landmark decision years ago in Springfield, Illinois, where we had a station, and our news director was going to run for the school board, which is a non-political office. His name was Bob Brown. And so we got into the political campaign, and that's when the FCC passed a rule that you had to offer equal time for every minute you were on the air. So I had to take my news director off the air for 8 weeks, because every minute he was on the air doing a newscast, that would have counted for a competition to come on and get the equal amount of time for free. And I guess it's popped up right now with Arnold Schwarzenegger saying if they're going to run his movies, they're trying to figure out a way that they get equal time for the opposition on that. That'll be interesting with 135 candidates.
Yeah, Gary Coleman, equal time on... Does WAIT utilize WAIT radio networks for Omaha programming, and has it been a consideration? And in answering that, explain WAIT network.
WAIT Radio Networks is an initiative. We bought through Dick's help, we bought a struggling radio network company that was based in Vail, Colorado, which is a whole other story about the work ethic in Vail, Colorado. But we spent a lot of time going out there and decided to buy the company. We didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but we bought the company. We went out there and decided we were going to bring them back to Omaha. We hired a well-known former Omaha broadcaster, brought him back to Omaha, Ken Ferno, and made him head of WAIT Radio Networks. WAIT Radio Networks now broadcasts six 24-hour, 7-day-a-week formats, and it will have seven, I think, as of September. We do have, I think we've only got one Omaha station that's on the WAIT Radio Network's formats, and that would be Coil Classic Country. It's interesting, the technology works that disc jockey is sitting at 90th and Western. He broadcasts the signal from 9th and Western up to a satellite 22,000 miles away. The satellite signal comes back to 50th and Capitol, gets shot out to Glenwood, Iowa, and then gets shot out to everybody in the state. So it's kind of a circuitous route to send the signals, but it works real well for us. That same signal is being used, the Classic Country format is being used in Maui, on the island of Maui in Hawaii, and in New Hampshire, if I remember correctly. And so are some of the various other formats are all over the country. It's a wonderful way to cover a lot of time frames for stations that are not otherwise going to ever be covered when you look at it. And, I feel sorry for our guys on Christmas night that they're sitting in there and broadcasting away, but it's a service that a lot of people want to have, and we make sure that they're able to have it.
A really good question for either one of you, or for both of you, perhaps. What do you see as the future of talk radio?
Talk radio is is usually thought of as being a format that appeals to those that are 35 years and older. And the good news for talk radio is that great majority of the baby boom is going to be passing into the primary areas of talk radio. So I think talk radio will grow as both a format and as a vehicle for reaching the advertisers. I also expect that talk radio will have a significant ability to influence what's going on, and by the fact that it's that it does have influence in the community, that it will continue to be an important part of the community.
I agree.
It's nearing 1 o'clock, and I'd like to thank our two guests today, Dick Chapin and Steve Saleen, for being here and answering our questions. I'd also like to thank KIOS Radio for airing the Omaha Press Club Noon Forum, and we are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's topic was shrink-wrapped radio, lots of stations, fewer owners. The speakers were Dick Chapin, former radio station owner, now a broker for radio station sales, and Steve Saleen, vice chairman of Waite Media. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, August 21st, 2003, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Omaha Press Club Education Committee Chairman Gary Kerr for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be Thursday, September 18th at 12 noon. The topic will be restaurants, cafes, pubs. Discussing restaurant reviewing will be Omaha World Herald reviewer John Keenan and Lincoln Journal Star reviewer Jeff Korbelik. If you'd like to attend this or other future forums, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Now this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.